Welcome back, everyone. This is Lloyd Creech II, a.k.a. Farmer Lloyd.
And this is John. You're here with us today on Radio Hour with EKH. How you doing today, Lloyd?
I'm doing good, John, and you?
So far, so good. What you got for us today, Lloyd?
The two topics that we've picked out for today are chicken coops and buying your garden seed. Now, on the chicken coops part, number one here says to know your community laws and regulations.
This is a big issue in a lot of your more urban areas. Out here in the country, we don't have a lot of problems with it, but a lot of cities are really pushing for small farmers out, and a lot of heat coming down on the homesteaders. So even in the country, you don't want cattle and chickens and stuff like that inside city limits, but in your major urban areas, like maybe Lexington, stuff like that, you're going to have a lot of issues with neighbors and stuff like that. So definitely be mindful of the laws and, what you're allowed to do and where you're allowed to do it.
Yes, sir. Normally around here and stuff, we'll not have too much problem with that and stuff. But if you live in any type of city and stuff, just make sure you go to the courthouse and read up on your regulations and laws. Number two on the list here is placement in your yard. Chicken manure in the summertime can smell real warm, real good when it's about 100 degrees and stuff. So a lot of people place it about 100, 200 feet from their back door. Still easy enough to walk to give the water and the feed to everything.
Also with that, you want to be mindful as far as, this is still a house and this is still our home, and we're looking at resale value and everything in the world. Not to mention you want everything to have a certain, appeal to it. So you definitely want to keep in mind how everything's going to look and affect your affect the house and as far as looks and, stuff like that. You want to keep everybody happy, especially the wife.
Number three on the list is space. Now, this is talking about space for the chickens, space in the yard, all that. Now, chicken spacing and stuff, it don't take up a whole lot per one chicken and stuff. The boxes inside the coop and everything, I think mine are like 12 by 12 or something like that. I have 26 of them in my chicken coop. I can also expand them if I need to or take some out if I don't have that many chickens.
The thing I've learned about laying boxes is, for me, I've got a few hens. I only have 5 boxes. But, I know a lot of people that will put 1 box per hen, and then you may have 20 hens using 3 boxes. I mean, hens are very particular about where they put their eggs and, exactly how they how that's handled, So the more options you can give them, the better, but don't be surprised if they don't end up using, just 1 or 2 of something you spent half the day working on. So
yeah, I've noticed that myself, and at one time I had about 32 chickens, 26 boxes, and they only used 3 of them. So
yeah, that happens a lot. I mean, with mine, I've got 2 boxes that I notice they get used more than any of the rest, and I'm to this day I've tried to insulate all the boxes. I've just wondered what makes those 2 so special, but I can't figure it out. So
all right, next on the list is ventilation. Now this goes back to the one we talked about a while ago about being 100 200 feet from the house. Now inside the chicken coop and stuff, make sure you have plenty of ventilation for the birds and for yourself and stuff. You don't want to breathe in all that dry dust from the chicken manure, and make sure the chickens have ventilation too. A lot of people will install some type of fan that will blow across the top of the chicken coop and stuff to help blow some of the heat and some of the dust outside of it.
Yeah, what I did in mine, I've got just a small yard coop, and what I did in mine was I actually took the eaves of it and I put chicken wire over top of them. That way in the winter I can go out there and put a board or block it off pretty easily, and then in the summer it just a wire mesh, it still keeps them safe, but at the same time you don't have to breathe all that in. So
all right, number 5 on the list is ease of cleaning. Now I clean out mine about once a month when I have chickens and stuff. Right now I don't have any stuff thanks to a weasel or a raccoon or whatever. But the ease of cleaning stuff, I just go out there with the front end loader and shovel it all into the front end loader and then make a big compost pile out of it.
The thing I've noticed about this is, I mean, I actually read into this a little bit before I ever got chickens, because I didn't know if it was going to be one of them things like horses where I was going to have to muck stalls every day, or if it was something that I could put out over time. And the thing that I've realized is, you know, it's just like anything else. It's a million ways to do it. You know, you can go out there. One really neat idea that I thought was a guy had actually poured a concrete pad below his coop, and he would actually go out there and spray off the concrete. Now, I don't know exactly how the heat off that concrete would affect the animals, you know, through the summer. If it got really hot, you'd have to keep it pretty shaded, I would imagine. But, you know, there's a lot of ways of doing that. Me, I let mine compact down, and then I'll go out and shovel it, you know, once a month. And, you know, while I don't have a front end loader, I have to use a wheelbarrow, but, you know, it's the same concept.
Yeah, the poor man's front end loader is the wheelbarrow there. Sorry about that, John. But,
that's no problem. Maybe I can borrow it one day.
Yeah, sure. Come on over. Number six, egg boxes and roost. Now, like we were talking about just a second ago, I have one time 32 chickens and only had 26 egg boxes. And the roosting rails and stuff, I have three roosting rails that are like 10-foot long, made out of a locust log that I cut up evenly and then nailed them together.
One of the things that I noticed in doing research and about the chicken, and also actually just owning my own, is the roosting rails. You can chickens have a particular order that they will actually roost in, and once they find their spot, that's where they're at. So if you're introducing new chicks or new chickens to a pre-existing flock, then you're going to have to be real mindful of that, because sometimes they don't like sharing so well. They can be very temperamental towards your, you know, towards your chickens, and you know, they can cause a lot of issues as far as non-laying and stuff like that. So you want to make sure you do have plenty of room for them, you know, for all of the, whether it's just the ones you've got now or if you add on, plenty of roosting rails.
Now, on the egg boxes and the boxes, any kind of box that you have your chickens laying in so they lay their eggs and stuff, one big factor is make sure they have like a roosting rail in front of their box, and it's far enough away that their manure does not fall into the box, because I have cleaned out so many boxes full of chicken manure, it's not even funny. And you know, there's nothing like wearing gloves and having to dig your hands down into that stuff and clean that out every couple of days.
Well, that's one thing that people don't really realize. You know, they see, and, you know, with Easter coming up, you know, that's one of the things that people really don't realize when they buy these little baby chicks, that, you know, they're a lot of hassle. They're a lot of mess, and, you know, keeping everything clean. And, you know, just because you have a cute little chick, it doesn't mean it's not going to grow up to be a, you know, a big mother hen. And, you know, they do eat, they do poop, and they do cause a lot of issues if you don't contain them right. So,
yeah, exactly. Now, number seven on the list here, in my chicken coop and stuff, it's actually part of a barn. It's I took one bay of the barn, which is a 12 by 12, and then I added on a 12 by 16 chicken yard to them. But one of the big factors here is I've cut one window into it, and then I wind up cutting another window into it. This research says that letting sunlight in on your chickens will increase their egg productivity in the winter months. I did not know this.
That is actually 100% true. Chickens lay best when they get between, I think, between 10 and 14 hours of direct sunlight a day. I'm sure there's a scientific reason behind it, but I have no idea what that is. But yeah, it actually does. It also allows them, the more sunlight they get, they will produce more often and on a regular schedule. That's one of the reasons that they, when the days get shorter in the winter, they start, you know, slowly declining in egg production. And also, it I'm not sure if it's, you know, like I said, it is, but I'm sure there's a scientific reason, but I do know that it also actually helps in the quality of eggs they're laying as far as the thickness of the shell. So,
okay,
a lot of benefits there.
All right. Also, on the coops and stuff, I'm always a firm believer, start out small and get bigger as you can go. One of the notes I wrote down here is have one that you can always add on to.
Yeah, I think that's a definite as far as that goes. It's always, you know, like you said, it's always, you don't want to, and we've talked about this on last week's show a little bit, you know, people, you know, just because you see one guy that's got, you know, 10 hens, he may have 10 kids, who knows, you know, but with, do what you want as far as your own size. If you have, you know, if you only going to eat one egg a day, you know, you only need one or two hens, you know, as far as that, and check their production level and stuff like that. But, yeah, if you're starting off, you don't want to go out there and just give half of your yard to a chicken coop when you may not end up, you know, sick of chickens and only having one or two in the end. So,
That's very true and stuff. I got sick of the eggs after a while. I couldn't give them away quick enough and stuff. Having 32 hens and stuff, and you're getting, you know, 25 to 30 eggs a day, maybe 32 on the really good days. And this is something to say too, is a chicken lays an egg every 19 hours.
Yeah, that basically once a day you're going to get an egg from a hen. If you have, you know, and that's one of the things that people need to be, you know, like I was saying, be mindful of. If you've got, you know, if you're getting one egg a day and it's just you and you're just, you know, unless you're looking at getting into production and selling eggs or, you know, some type of marketability thing here. You know, unless you just want to eat eggs for every meal for the rest of your life, you probably should get, you know, keep it small.
Yeah, very true. Now, on the next one here, John's chicken coop originally started out to be a chicken tractor that he could move around the yard, and it had wheels on it, be mobile and everything, and then a couple weeks later, it actually turned into a coop. Chicken tractors are really cool for the urban areas and put around your garden and everything. They have wheels, they have a handle on them, you can fit two or three chickens in them, they have a place to stay up at night and stuff, and then they can get down and eat the fresh grass in the morning and the bugs and all that.
They are, and one of the huge, well, it's actually a blessing and a drawback at the same time, you know. But the blessing side of the chicken tractor is it is mobile, and with that you can, if you have a garden, I've seen so many people that will actually space their rows the width of the tractor. That way they can just pull the chickens, you know, move them along through in between the rows of their garden automatically. They're weeding their garden. They're fertilizing their garden. I mean, it's a huge asset to your plants. Now, the issue with that is if you go out of town or, you know, for some unforeseeable future, if you leave them in one spot for too long, they're going to end up eating it down to bare dirt and, you know, you're going to have a big dead spot of grass right in your front yard. So, you know, you got to kind of be mindful of both things.
I had never thought about doing the garden rows the width of the chicken tractor. That's a really good idea.
Yeah, it worked. I mean, it was a great plan. And then, like you said, my tractor ended up being a coop. And I've actually, this year, I think I'm going to go ahead and try to get that going, you know, as soon as, which we're still early in the growing season, still yet for the things that I grow. But, you know, I think that would be a great idea. And
now, also, chicken tractors can be made out of anything and stuff. You can take an old car, take an old camper top from a truck.
Oh, yeah. I've seen, actually, for the one of the neatest ones I ever saw was, have you ever seen the A-frames for the swing sets out in the yard? You can buy, you know, you'll buy, it's a standalone swing set, but what they did was they actually took that, braced it up a little bit, and then wrapped it in chicken wire and, you know, put some wheels at the bottom of it. And I was like, man, that is a great idea, you know, because you'll find them, you know, in scrap piles and stuff. You know, somebody, the swing will eventually wear out or, you know, and you're left with a, you know, 6 foot swing or 6 foot stand for it to be on and no swing. So, but stuff,
yeah,
like that.
One of the ones I seen, they actually took an old cab off a tractor and put some wheels on it and did the chicken wire all the way around it and left one of the doors to where you could open it and stuff. And then they had a place in there where the chickens could get up at night and everything. And then the next day they'd open another door and let them back out and wheel it around to different parts of the yard every day so they could eat and eat the bugs and do the manure and, you know, fertilize the yard at the same time. All right, the next one is chicken tunnels and stuff. This is where they've taken a roll of chicken wire, bent it over, not made a crease out of it, but made it like a tunnel out of it, and tied a piece of wire to both of the loose ends to make a tunnel. And then they put this around the garden, and so they eat the grass and eat the bugs and everything. And
I think this is an awesome idea. I saw it one time, and I thought, that's really cool. I'd love to try it. The only thing that scares me is, it depends where you live. You know, I live in a place where I've got a creek, I've got raccoons, I've got stray dogs, I've got pretty coyotes. Every predator you can imagine I've got at some point in time or another running through my yard. So just last week I had to go out and I had the biggest possum I've ever seen in my life was almost inside my coop. So with the tunnels, that's my only fear, because they are fairly new and I've never actually had one, so I don't know how. You know, that's always something to be mindful of with chickens.
Yeah. Now, with the tunnels and stuff, I've noticed they also had a tunnel that ran from the chicken tractor or the chicken coop to where if you train the chickens right and stuff, they could you could get them to come out maybe to a little bit of feed or something or other, and then keep them out there all day, and then at night and stuff, you brought them back in, and it was all through a tunnel system from the coop or from the chicken tractor. Now, also, there's a couple little things here I'd like to throw in. I seen in one of the urban homesteading magazines the other day, and it was a chicken mirror. Now, John, have you ever heard of a chicken mirror?
No, that's a new one on me.
I don't think a chicken would really like to look at itself in the mirror or stuff. It might peck at it and break its beak or something like that and then break the mirror and have 7 years of bad luck. But I would think that would be a gimmick. I wouldn't buy one.
Well, you know, homesteading, especially chickens, that's one of the things that, you know, you're going to run into a lot. There are a lot of gimmicks out there. And, I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't work. I'm just saying that I wouldn't waste my money.
Yeah, you said gimmick here. I got two more for you, and one of them was in that same magazine, and then I seen one online. The next one is they're selling a chicken swing now. It's about 16 inches long, made out of heavy duty plastic, got bungee cords on it, and then you tie two strings from the ceiling of your chicken coop down to these bungee cords, and the chickens can jump up on them and swing. You know, just like the little kid in the schoolyard. Yeah, chickens may do that. Why, I don't know. But I'm here to tell you, I just take a 2x4, cut it in half, about 16 inches long, put two holes in it, tie some rope to it, and be done with it. They were selling the swing for like 30 or 40 bucks.
Good job.
And you can make one for, you know, scrap lumber and scrap rope laying around the house for free. So I don't know.
I've never seen a chicken swing, so that's a new one on me, too.
All right, the next one was, I seen this on the internet the other day. I got to reading about it. It's called the lettuce ball, and these guys will sell you a barn nail tied to a piece of string, and you slide a head of lettuce through it and let it hang from the ceiling of the chicken coop. And this is to help them trim their beaks down a little bit and give them a little bit of extra food and stuff. Because I know chickens love lettuce and stuff. I feed my chickens heads of lettuce all the time.
I think that is probably the most entrepreneurial thing that I've ever heard in my life. How ingenious is it to say, here's a string and a nail, and pay me $6 for it? I wish I would have come up with it myself.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
My dream was to sing on the radio station in Memphis.
Your favorite country classics play here.
Play here. Hi there, this is Dolly Parton.
This is Willie Nelson.
This is Reba McEntire, and you're listening to
WSKB, more country.
That's what music is all about. It's all about, it's all about.
Hi, this is James Comer, Agriculture Commissioner of Kentucky. Kentucky 4-H, Kentucky FFA, and Kentucky Proud are three of the most important agriculture programs in our state. As you renew your farm license plates at the county clerk's office, please consider making the voluntary $10 donation that is split evenly between these fine programs. Making the donation is an excellent way to support our youth and the programs that make a lasting impact on their lives. Ask your county clerk for more information, and thank you.
that's all I have for chicken coop segment. John, you got anything to add to that?
No, not really. I mean, pretty much just, you know, keep an eye on how big your coop, how big a coop you need to cover how big a flock you want, and, you know, be mindful of everybody else around you, your neighbors, and, you know, your family, and, you know, just kind of go with it. It's fun. Definitely enjoyable.
Yeah, it's definitely fun. It can be just a little bit of work and stuff with the chickens, feeding and watering them every day and everything, but you can get the 5-gallon waterers or the 5-pound feeders and stuff, and that you can go out maybe a day or two without having to do it every day. But
oh yeah, definitely. I mean, there's ways around it, and the longer you do it, the more you'll figure out. So what's next on the list, Lloyd? What we got?
Next on the list is the seeds for growing them in your garden. On this part of it here, the big thing to remember, just because a seed company says that their seeds are heirloom seeds, you need to do your homework first and stuff. There have been a couple companies out there, I'm not going to name any, that say they're heirloom seeds, and they are not heirloom seeds.
Well, first of all, you know, by definition, heirloom seed is a seed that has, it's not been altered in any way. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, non-genetically modified or altered.
Now, your GMO, your genetically modified seeds, normally they're cheaper, and a lot of times they're modified to grow in a variety of different areas, which means a lot of times they'll be easier to grow, and you'll still get a pretty substantial yield. But the thing with your non-GMOs, it may not be as good a yield the first year, but after that, that seed will actually, it will kind of acclimate to your soil and your specific area biologically, and you know, the next year it will more than likely outproduce your GMO seeds.
And that's the other point there. Save as many seeds as you can by yourself and stuff. You know, take a couple of your tomatoes, your lettuce, your radishes, broccolis, whatever and stuff. Get the seed off of them, dry them out, and put them in a container. Usually like a Ziploc storage bag, small, and make sure they're dried out fully first. Put them in a Ziploc storage bag and put them somewhere cool and dry. Do not let them gain moisture.
Yeah, seed saving for me was something that was really, it was something I'd never really heard of. You know, and I'd always seen older people do it, but I'd never really tried it myself. So I figured there was probably a million processes to do it, and it was going to be a real headache. It's actually a fairly simple process. You know, you pretty much just grab a couple tomatoes, throw them out on the back deck or somewhere you can keep an eye on them, let them rot down to the seeds. You get the seeds out and, you know, lay them on a napkin or something, let them dry out, and then there you go. You're ready for the next year. I mean, it's not really a complicated issue at all, and it's not really a lot of work, you know, but the payoff on your heirloom seeds is, you know, huge as far as being able to produce a lot your next year. And also, you know, it's not something that's been, you know, modified in a lab somewhere. It's you know, it's all natural. So, you know, there's all kinds of health debates on, you know, genetically modified stuff right now, as far as, you know, some people are saying it causes this and causes that. And I mean,
now on the heirloom seeds and stuff, he's talking about letting your, tomatoes rot down and stuff. Now, one trick I've learned, I have one solar oven that I built last year. I put the pictures of it on Facebook, and during a cold 30 degree day, it actually got up to about 180 degrees inside that thing in direct sunlight. And what I did was I took a tomato, sliced it down into like sandwich slices, and put it into that oven for just a little bit, not very long, to help speed up the drying time of those seeds. And it worked pretty good. Or you could do the way John said and just let it rot down and stuff, but get the seeds out. They got little hairs on, tomato seeds do, and they tend to stick together and stuff. So make sure you try to get each seed individually separated and then have them dried out and stuff, or you'll have, you know, four or five plants trying to grow in the same or off the same little pod there.
Yeah, the thing is, I mean, you know, years ago, I mean, naturally, a plant, the way a plant will, you know, rejuvenate or, you know, spread is, you know, one of their fruits will fall on the ground, either rot or an animal will, you know, eat part of it and then, you know, scatter it that way. Pretty much all we're doing is doing the same process and, you know, letting it work for us, really, instead of going and, you know, purchasing more seeds. And, you know, it's free. Once you've bought your initial crop, you know, the next year you can, you know, you'll have way more seeds than you, you know, actually need. And you've already, you don't have to go buy anymore. So you also, you know, what works with those plants too is another huge selling point for that. So,
and you just brought up another good topic and stuff. The more seeds you save this year is the less money you're going to have to spend the next year. And also you can get into heirloom seed swaps. They had one in Montgomery County 2-3 weeks ago. I would like to have one here in another week or two and stuff, because we're still early into, I'm just now starting to seed up into the greenhouse a little bit. We still got a week or two of variants before we have to have them done. But if anybody is interested in doing that, just look us up on Facebook and comment or like us on one of our posts and tell us if you'd be interested in doing a heirloom seed swap.
Yeah, definitely. The heirloom seed, with the swapping, I think when you keep it in a small area like that, you're going to have a great success. Plus, you can go out instead of, you know, everybody's going to end up with more seeds. The first time you do this, you're going to take, you know, all these, you know, these tomatoes is all going to be lined all over your back porch, and you're thinking, you know, I'm going to get just a few seeds, and, you know, I'm probably going to end up having to buy them. But the thing is, you're going to end up with a huge abundance of extra seeds. So if you can get in on a seed swap, I mean, that's definitely a huge trade. And plus, you know, like I said before, you know, that initial cost, you don't have to go out and buy seeds, and you don't have to, you can also talk to the farmers who grew these and see what they did, you know, as far as if they have any tips for, hey, you know, I got this pepper here, and, you know, it's, you're talking to your other farmers and your friends like that, you know, they can really help you out a lot as far as giving you advice on certain crops and, you know, specialty stuff. So I highly recommend it.
So I got started into heirlooms. One of my neighbors came over to me and they said, Lloyd, we know you do the greenhouse and everything. Will you grow some tomato plants for us? And I was like, yeah, sure. And he's like, well, these are special tomato plants. And I was like, well, what's special about them? And they're like, well, they're purple tomatoes. And, well, they come across on the Mayflower and stuff. So they've been heirloomed since before America was discovered. And so there's a little bit of history behind them. I planted 12 or 18 of them already this year. I'll probably plant another 12 sometime in the next week or two and stuff. But, you know, these heirloom seeds and stuff, they have a lot of history behind them and stuff. If you keep it in a local community and stuff, you can keep that history good and alive. But the thing is, you got to keep some back year after year and stuff. When you grow some, you know, take 2 or 3 tomatoes out there, let them dry out and stuff, get them to seed, separate the seeds out the best you can, and save them till the next year. There's also on our Facebook page, there's a reference that I shared on March 26th. If you get on there here in the next day or two, scroll down about 6 or 7 articles, and there's a list of 230 heirloom seed suppliers that are listed by your state. EKH has, you know, we're in several states and everything, so that's a good article. You can click on it. You can go to it by your state or anything. I use a couple of companies outside the state for a couple of things, but most of the stuff I do use is stuff here inside of Kentucky.
Yeah, anytime you can, you know, I mean, definitely buying local and stuff like that is a huge benefit, because, you know, especially with seeds, because like I was saying earlier about the biology of it, you know, these seeds are going to be grow different here than they would in, you know, northern Ohio or Florida or Georgia or Texas or wherever, you know. So anytime you can keep it local, and one of the thing is Kentucky has such a strong agriculture, you know, environment that there's so many people, even, you know, even in, you know, like we were talking before, it doesn't have to be just a big farm, you know. There's so many people in these, in urban areas, will have a backyard garden or, you know, I mean, even my grandmother has just a few plants that she likes, you know, she'll have potted plants and potted tomatoes, and she can grow the most beautiful plants you've ever seen in, you know, 2 5-gallon buckets out on the back porch, so.
John, you just said this, my fiance, Teresa, last year she bought some of these. We didn't get them planted, but we are going to plant them this year. It's called on the deck corn, and you can grow corn in 24-inch wide, I think they're 16 or 18-inch tall containers, and the only thing different about this corn is when it comes time to pollinate them, you have to pollinate them with a paintbrush. You take it from the top there, and you paint it onto the little tassels there on the corn and stuff, and help pollinate it. And really? That's the only thing you got to do and stuff. That's the first time I'd ever heard of that. She didn't get to do it last year, but we are definitely going to try to do it this year.
Well, you know, that's the thing. And the more homesteading grows and the more people want to grow their own food, then you're definitely going to see more of these container gardens. I mean, they have raised beds now that you can actually just go buy. But, I mean, you know, I definitely prefer to build my own, any of that. But at the same time, it's so neat. And there's all kinds of, they call them hacks, all kinds of ways of, you know, pallets is a huge form too, as going out and I've seen, clearly pallets are the duct tape of the gardening world, because you can use a pallet for anything. I mean, any type of gardening whatsoever, you can go out and take a few pallets and build a bed or a fence or clearly anything. But anything that goes on the back porch and make, you know, you can grow it in space. Another one is those upside down tomatoes and topsy turvies and stuff like that. I mean, some of them really do, you know, have a huge yield to them for the amount of space they actually take up. And I mean, I think that is just, I think that's, you know, when people start playing around with stuff like that, you can really, you know, the opportunities are endless there. So,
yeah. And, you know, the underlying, thing of this story and stuff is on your heirloom seeds, make sure they are actually heirloom. Make sure the company ain't selling you something that is not heirloom if it's what you're going for and stuff. I try to stay away from as many GMOs as I can. They cannot be that healthy, or, you know, they could. I could be wrong. But I try to stick with the heirlooms as much as I can.
Well, the thing is, you know, with the GMOs and stuff like that, it's been tested to a degree, but at the same time, it's such a broad area. I mean, it's hard to really prove one way or another. You know, these heirloom seeds, you know, they came from, they're all natural. So at this, you know, just going by that logic in my own, you know, in my own humble opinion, you know, going from that logic, it seems like it should be pretty safe if it, you know, sustained our, you know, ancestors for thousands of years and they didn't have any issues with it. So
yeah, you know, these heirloom seeds and stuff, like I said, mine has history before the Mayflower and stuff. So, you know, if it worked for them a couple hundred years ago, I think it's going to work for me from here and into the future. So that, you know, that's what I'm going to stick with. John, you got anything else on the seeds?
I think that's pretty much covered it. I mean, as far as that goes, you know, with your seeds, you want to go with a reputable dealer, or, you know, like I said, if you can get on one of these seed swaps, these people, you know, heirlooms right now, I mean, you get a lot of, you know, kind of like with the chicken coops, there's a lot of bandwagon type stuff. So a lot of your companies are saying, oh, it's a 100% heirloom seed. But at the same time, you know, there's also reports coming out that that's not always the case. So, you know, it's better, you know, if for no other reason to redo them yourself, and, you know, you might, you know, get in one of these local seed swaps where you actually know some of the people, or, you know, if not, you can at least verify, you know, they live close. So if you do have an issue, you can complain. That's what, you know, that's what I do.
But, well, and also on the seed swaps, There are several, I know four or five, not right off the top of my head, but I know there's four or five organizations and stuff that do nothing but heirloom stuff. Sometimes you have to pay a subscription fee to them and stuff, but everything is 100% heirloom. And you can send stuff in, and they'll put it into the library, and then you can get stuff out of it. They are pretty beneficial and stuff. They have all kinds of seeds from all over the U.S. and probably some from outside the U.S. But you can look into doing those stuff. Just go to the Bing search engine or the Google search engine and look them up for heirloom seed societies or something.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, those are definitely, you know, that's on a larger scale. I mean, that would be great. And, you know, you could get places, you know, seeds from all over the United States. I mean, that's huge. But at the same time, I mean, if you want, you know, just starting out, I mean, get in with a local seed swap. I'm sure some of your what are they called, conservation people around there, your own community could help you out with that, or Facebook, whatever. Also, you know, when you're starting to grow and starting to look for these, you know, check your soil, you know, go with good, reputable name brand stuff when you're, you know, when you're wanting to start out like this, and your results should be good. I mean, I always tell people that growing things really is not as complicated as they try to make it. You know, you take good dirt, good seeds, good water, and good light, and you're going to have a good yield, so.
Well, we hope everybody has a good yield and stuff. There's a couple people out there that I've ran into that they couldn't do too good of anything. So next on the list, we have in the studio today, we interview of Plowshares Community out of Clark County. They're in the studio with us today. We're going to do just a little interview with them. So just hang on.
We're Pickup Country, 104.9 WSKV.
Hi, this is James Comer, Agriculture Commissioner of Kentucky. Kentucky 4-H, Kentucky FFA, and Kentucky Proud are three of the most important agriculture programs in our state. As you renew your farm license plates at the county clerk's office, please consider making the voluntary $10 donation that is split evenly between these fine programs. Making the donation is an excellent way to support our youth and the programs that make a lasting impact on their lives. Ask your county clerk for more information, and thank you.
We have Plowshares Community with us today, and they're going to talk about their history just a little bit.
Hi, I'm Alice Melendez, and I started Plowshares just a little over a year ago. We got started, and we are working on building up a homestead site in Clark County and using it as an educational center. And so we've been real excited about that. And on the same token, helping the main farm that I grew up on transition towards more ecologically smart and better money practices, organic farming, and trying new crops like hemp and growing small grains. So we're excited about a lot of things.
All right. Alice, do y'all... What type of programs do y'all have going on right now?
So this year, for the first time, we got a grant from the Greater Clark Foundation to do what we're calling Homes to Homestead. And we've done a series. We did making soap. We've done medicinal plants. We did this fantastic tour organized by Mark Reese, who's been in Extension for years, to look at some different homestead sites in Clark and Estill and Powell County. Next week, we're doing a similar session on rainwater harvesting, and so we're going to talk about getting old cisterns back up to speed, and then also talking about managing water runoff and ponds and catching water on the surface of the land to try to use it for irrigation and smart ways to take care of plants and animals. So we're doing water. And then we're going to have our last one for that series is April 25th. It's between Earth Day and May Day. And there's a big global week of action about kind of moving our whole planet towards a more environmentally and kind of community smart way of living. And so we're having a big Earth Day party on the 25th.
What's the details of the 25th? What are you going to have there and all that?
Well, we're going to sell a bunch of calves here soon, and so we're looking forward to a big fat check. And then we're going to buy some solar panels to run. We have grains with fans on them, with grain bins with fans and dryers on it. And so we're going to put in solar panels for the grain dryer. And we're going to potentially drill seed hemp, because we actually got on the pilot program for growing hemp for seed oil, industrial hemp, and we're really excited about it. Because, you know, it was once one of the great crops of Kentucky. And so we might get to plant that on that date too. And then, you know, we'll probably do some little building projects. And then I'm looking to get a band for in the evening and maybe have kind of a potluck. So it should be a big old day.
Okay. How can everybody out there reach you and stuff by via Facebook, email, phone numbers, and all that?
Sure. We're a Plowshares Community on Facebook. And on the website, it's plowsharesforappalachia.com. Although I think Plowshares Community, plowshares.community will get you there too on the website. And on my website, there's a contact form. You can contact me through that and I'll get an email right off. My phone number's up on the website too. So please give us a holler, because, you know, we're kind of new at this. Like I said, Plowshares is only a year old and we have tons of work to do to make this old log house, you know, there's a historic log house on the site, and I don't know if they were trying to keep from getting shot or what, but they put this cabin, you know, right on the top of the hill, and the wind just howls up there. You know, there's all this old infrastructure. There's an old root cellar, but, you know, it'd been in disrepair for years, and animals can get in there. You know, there's a cistern, but it's been disconnected ever since they got city water in the 90s. And so there's like all this infrastructure. We got a big garden spot and we're trying to really put it back together. So if people want to contact us, we're willing to trade work days. You know, we've been shopping a lot on Craigslist. We're getting meat ready to sell. And so we want to be in communication with the community. So just look us up, Plowshares Community, Facebook, or Plowshares for Appalachia on the web.
Now, you guys do classes and stuff, too, as far as, like, how to do this stuff, and you're willing to teach other people to do this. Is that correct?
Or? Yeah, absolutely. And we're taking suggestions for what people want to do in the next series. Like, we had this series kind of planned out from, like, end of February up until Earth Day. But once we do those two classes, we're going to keep doing stuff. And we did a little summer camp program last year, just one day a week, and I want to do that again, where we, on Fridays, you know, people could bring their kids, drop them off for the whole day, we'd be in the garden, we'd cook stuff and eat stuff out of the garden, and the kids had a ball. But
yeah, I think I think it sounds like a really cool idea. You know, anytime you can get the younger ones generation into this, earlier the better, I think.
It's a great, I mean, in the summer, you know, kids get bored, and I mean, it's a great way for parents to have a whole day and for kids to be outside, you know, digging in the dirt. It's good for them. And I'm homeschooling too. Kids are 4 and 5 years old, so I'm always looking for more kids to hang out.
I've been over to their Plowshares Community Farm, and it's over on Shoalsville Road, correct?
Yeah, that's right. It's 3581 Shoalsville.
Very easy to find. It's right, if you go down Kidville Road out of Mount Sterling, turn right onto Shoalsville, or if you come across Kidville Road off of Highway 15 out of Powell County, you can turn left onto 646, which is Kidville Road, and then turn another left over onto Shoalsville. So it's really easy to find. Really nice farm over there. You'll see the old log cabin up on the hill. That's a dead giveaway. That's where you need to be.
Yep. Jared thinks we need a sign. I think he's absolutely right. And, you know, there's plenty to do, but we'll get the sign up.
So what are your plans after this? Are you planning on moving into the cabin and having it for a full residence and kind of going back, you know, to the...
That's a great question.
Primitive, you know.
So, I mean, I grew up at, like, the main house on the farm. And, you know, my mom's there. She ain't going anywhere. And I don't want to be living right on top of her either. And I live over on Ruckerville Road, which is, it's about 10 minutes away. And I've got my own little spot. But, you know, there's another guy who works on the farm who lives at the cabin. And Jared, who's here, and he can introduce himself. And he's living at the cabin. And he should give you a little minute to tell about how he got to us. Because we're looking for more people to come join us. We definitely have two more spots open, and we'd like other people to come live there.
Hi, my name is Jared Graham. I'm actually originally from Dayton. I found Alice on the internet from about a year ago post, and have since been in contact with her. I moved down here about a month ago. So far, we've been going on a roll. We got chickens already in the brooder house, about 100 of them. And then also we have about four little piglets right now that we're going to be putting out in the garden to till the garden up. We don't want to do any tilling. The less work we have to do and the more work we can make the animals do, I think the better. And they're also, I mean, they're going to be on pasture, so they're doing everything that they naturally want to do. And the chickens will also be out on pasture in protected cages, but they get moved every day, fresh bugs, fresh grass, and everything.
See, that's the thing that a lot of people don't realize is, you know, 100 years ago, the animals did the brunt of the work. You know, it's not as much, you know, today you have tractors and tillers, but, you know, back then, and when you get into a more primitive type, you actually have a lot more, you know, your animals help you out more than just a food source. You know, they even oxen and cattle were used as, you know, running plows and pulling plows even before horses were, and, you know, a lot of that stuff. So a community like that sounds extremely interesting right now.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of learning right now also. I mean, this is obviously, you know, first year that pigs and chickens have been on this farm. So we're doing a lot more just trying to learn ourselves, but also teach other people on how to do this themselves. And we're more than welcome if anybody wants to come out and visit and see how our operation's going. If anybody's ever done this before and like to come out and see how other people are doing it differently, I'm always open to learning and also teaching in any kind of, whether it's a mistake or if it was a gain. I mean, either way, it's a huge gain actually for the farm, just learning trial and error.
You know, here in Kentucky, we don't really think about anybody being from Dayton as having a lot of farming background. But, you know, I do have family that live in Ohio, and Ohio is has an extremely strong agricultural presence. You know, there's farms all over, you know, pretty much all over the state. It's not that much different from Kentucky. It's just a lot flatter.
I grew up actually in the suburbs. I only started farming about 4 years ago, and since then I can't stop. That's all I talk about, and obviously, a lot of people get tired of it, but...
And that's why we're so glad to have him, because I feel the same way. Like, since I lived in Texas, I lived in Houston for 6 years, and I've been away to school. I grew up here, but I moved away a lot. And since I've been back, like, all I want to do is, like, it's going to rain this afternoon. I'm going to try to get that sunflower chisel plow through the field and loosen it up ahead of the rain. I mean, all I want to do is farm and talk about this whole project growing up, so we got the bug.
Yeah, we've actually warned people about that before, because it seems like, you know, once you get into this, it escalates really quickly. You know, you go from a backyard greenhouse or a few plants, or, you know, and next thing you know, you've got a small chicken coop with two or three hens, and then the next thing you know, you got a brooder system going, and you're raising chicks, and before you know it, you're looking at 100 acres to buy somewhere. So, I mean, I totally understand that.
All right, Alice, one more time, can you tell us how we can get a hold of you?
Yep, just look for us at plowsharesforappalachia.com or Plowshares Community on Facebook. And Plowshares Community Facebook, you know, if you use Facebook, it's a great way to hear about every event coming up. And through the website, you can get my number, you can send me an email. And we'd love to meet you either at the rainwater harvesting April 18th or at our Earth Day party on the 25th, and it should be a good time.
All right, well, thank you all for stopping by and doing an interview with us. We should see you all at the classes. I've already been to one of them, like I said earlier. I'll definitely be at some more of the classes. I'll get John over here involved, too.
Definitely.
And we'll see how we can help each other here. All right, that was an interview with Plowshares Community and stuff. You can get them on Facebook, or you can get them on the net at plowsharesappalachia.com. All their information's there. Pretty good people. You know, you can go get on there on Facebook and stuff, see all the classes, and we'll see you at one of their classes. Next on the list is Words of Wisdom for the Week. And this week's Words of Wisdom, the two books that should never just sit on a bookshelf. the Holy Bible, and the Old Farmer's Almanac. And John is here with us now for the good days from the Old Farmer's Almanac.
All right, let me see if I can find this here. You'd think I'd be better prepared for this, considering it's the only segment I got to do by myself. Let's see, the good days from the Old Farmer's Almanac, April 4th through the 10th. April the 6th is a good day to quit smoking. It's also a good day to start a diet to lose weight, which I probably need those. April 8th and 9th is a good day to go camping. That's the one I'll probably pay most attention to. I don't know. The 6th and 7th is plant below ground crops. The 8th and 9th, prune to discourage the growth. 6th and 7th is canned pickles and make sauerkraut. Ugh, I've never been a sauerkraut person. Let's see. The 8th and 9th, begin logging. April 10th, setting post or pour concrete. April 6th and 7th, breeding animals. April 6th, wean animals or children. And April 6th and 7th is also good days to slaughter livestock. So anybody that's, got some free ham or bacon, I'm definitely looking forward to that one. So what's next on the agenda, Lord? Is that all we got? Or
We're getting close to the end here. If you would like any more information on the topics we discuss on here, you can go to our Facebook page and search for Eastern Kentucky Homesteaders. While you're there, you can like us. You can also comment or like any of the articles you see there. If you do not have a Facebook account, you can go to Google or Bing on the search engines and find us that way too. Also, the last little tidbit we have for the day, I've been working on a little publication for the last month or two about buy local, your meats and fabrication stuff for the farm, a little bit of everything. I'll have a link on there, it should be already on there, that if you are interested in putting anything on there like local honey, local beef off the hoof or chicken or turkey, anything like that, if you do fabrication work, wood making as far as furniture or anything, and you'd like to be part of that publication, like it, comment on it and what you do and how I can reach you. I will get in touch with you here in the near future and be putting that publication together. It's going to be serving the counties of Montgomery, Clark, Powell, Menifee, Bath County, part of Round County. So it's going to be a local buy here, stay here publication that I hope to get off the ground.
Yeah, I think our community definitely has a need for this because, you know, one, you got a lot of new people, you know, new farmers and stuff like that. And, you know, they were joking about me and Lloyd a minute ago knowing everybody in the country. But, you know, one of the reasons we do know so many people is because we try to get in touch with so many people doing this stuff. So, you know, it's we're constantly, you know, hey, we need this fixed. Who can we call and, you know, get a good deal, you know, who does good work for a reasonable price, or, hey, I need plants, so who can I get a hold of for that, or I need, you know. So that's definitely the inspiration behind this, is hopefully getting that information together in one central location and, you know, getting it out there to you guys, so.
Yeah, like I said, just go to our Facebook page, find us that way, or get on Google or Bing or one of them. And like that link and or like that article and comment, put what you have for sale there and how we can get a hold of you, and we'll contact you and we'll get a publication put out here in just a little bit when we get the money raised up to pay for it, and we'll get it back out to y'all. That's all I have for Radio Hour with EKH this week. John, you got anything else to add?
I think that's pretty much covered it. Like I said, like us on Facebook and kind of help us out with some of this stuff. And hopefully we can provide more information and a little more help back to you guys. So thank you guys for everything.
Thank you all. See you next week.